Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is the awesome Brian Gardner, a minimalist designer and the founder of CEO of Agent Engine. And we're going to talk about minimalism today. This episode is brought to you by UserList, a lifecycle messaging tool for SaaS companies. It's perfect for sending smart onboarding campaigns or any other behavior-based communication. We have everything you need to get started quickly and painlessly. Developer-friendly API, campaign templates, and hands-on support from the founders. Try UserList free at userlist.com. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Jane. How are you?
We're doing great and so excited to have you as a guest. How are you doing yourself?
I'm doing great. It's sunny here in Chicago. I've got a full cup of coffee. I'm talking to you and just excited to have my day.
Amazing. So in case somebody who's listening to us doesn't know, you're super famous as a designer, but you've been also focusing on products. Can you dive into your background story and also what you're up for lately?
Well, I wouldn't quite say I'm a super famous designer. I do have a degree of following, primarily through the journey of Studio Press, which is a great place to start. About 12 years ago, I created a company called Studio Press, which sold premium WordPress themes. And as a designer, I was the one who designed most of the themes that we sold at Studio Press. And so throughout that journey, I sort of kind of rose to a point where I had to run the company and merged it with Copyblogger, which is a content marketing blog. And I became chief product officer of that company, which ultimately meant I was in charge of product and ultimately design. And that was a fun run of many years of doing business. And 2 years ago, we sold Studio Press to WP Engine, which is a WordPress host. And since then, I have tried to figure out what exactly I want to do in my life when I grow up, as I joke to myself. And so the last couple of years have just been sort of dabbling around with different projects, taking on freelance, you know, design projects and whatnot. And ultimately, when I realized that the freelance life wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do, since I've always been sort of a product person, I decided, you know, time to pick a niche and build a product and design it well and make an impact within a specific industry. And so that brings us to sort of where we're at now with Agent Engine.
Tell us more about that project.
So probably 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even longer than that, during the Studio Press run, we had designed a couple of real estate WordPress themes, which we sort of called Agent Press. And it was a little bit of a movement, and at the time, it was received well, but we just never really unpacked that within the company. And, you know, throughout the couple of years, the themes kind of got outdated, and we just never replaced them. But I've always had a heart and a passion for real estate. We've bought and sold houses over the years many times, and it's just, it's always been an industry and a process that's been interesting to me. And so, yeah, I realize in these days, in order to become successful, niching down and sort of focusing on a subset of people usually is what happens, at least in startups and SaaS companies. You know, when you find a specific problem that you can solve for a specific group of people, those are the companies that really sort of traditionally do well. And so as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, big picture, you know, it was like, well, first of all, let's decide who we're going to do it for. And the real estate industry was just something I couldn't deny. And so we decided to go with that. And I have two partners with Agent Engine, Tony Clark, who was a partner of mine at Copyblogger, and Jason Schuler, who in the design world has a degree of following and has known for designing and building a number of products and services also. So it was a good fit. And so we're excited to bring really good design and user experience to an industry that typically just doesn't have good design and user experience, just because real estate has always been sort of an older, antiquated place for people to do business. So we're excited and hope to do good stuff.
I'm curious why you didn't decide to focus on the audience of somebody who's closer to the internet ecosystem. I don't know, designers or founders or someone else, but you decided to bring that connection into real world.
Yeah, you know, like you get this as a designer. Designers and creatives at their deepest level, ultimately, and this is for me, we have what they call imposter syndrome, where amongst a group of designers, we feel inferior, right? Everyone's a better designer than us. And there's a lot of competition and stuff like that. And so for me, it was partly, I just didn't want to, you know, try to compete against people who were younger and more talented and all of that. But it was also because I really felt there was a need in that industry. You know, I didn't want to hang out and do stuff in an area that was already flooded with, you know, products and services and things like that. And real estate, there's a need. There's a huge need. It's getting better over the last few years. Certain companies have kind of risen up and tried to bring good design. Some of the even real estate companies, such as Compass and Century 21, kind of really doubling down on branding and better design. But there was a need, and that's really where it came down to for me, was just me wanting to solve a problem for a group of people that, you know, clearly need help. I love personal branding and the idea of, you know, visual representation. And I just feel like so many agents out here in the States could benefit from, you know, having a simple, nicely designed, beautiful website, you know?
I think the same can be said about virtually any offline industry, really, because the internet penetration is not really that hard into many industries.
I would agree with that.
Let's talk about minimalism itself. And I wonder, throughout the ages of your design career, how many years was that? When did you realize that you are a minimalist?
So I've been online designing for probably 15 years. And through the early stages of Studio Press, I designed in color because that's what everybody did. Everybody likes color. And maybe 5 or 6 years ago, when you create WordPress themes for people, we had, you know, 250,000 people who became customers. So you start to understand the way people use websites, and just because there's so many people using your products. And I realized that there was a certain type of design that I was gravitating towards. And at the same point in my personal life, it was sort of intersecting with a relationship I started developing with a gentleman by the name of Joshua Becker, who is the founder of Becoming Minimalist. And he talks about decluttering and just owning less and more from a house perspective. But some of the things that he was talking about really kind of made their way into my head. And I just realized that I felt like the web was a cluttered space. And it started with, you know, sidebars. And I would go to blogs and the sidebars would just be littered with stuff, you know, with Instagram feeds and pictures and ads and this, that, and the next thing. And I was like, it just seemed so unnecessary and so cluttered. And it took away from the experience I was having as a consumer of that website. And so I created a movement called No Sidebar, which was literally around removing sidebars from websites. And so I started doing that at Studio Press, where I would design themes and just remove a sidebar from the theme and say, you know, it's header, content, footer. This is what it is, right? And it kind of evolved into intentional design, which is putting things in places on a screen that made sense to me instead of, you know, sort of the traditional above the folds or, you know, people putting things at the top of sidebars, which I would think by the time you scroll down and read the content, the sidebar is long gone anyways, right? Because it's just the way the web works. And so I created a movement called No Sidebar, and that sort of evolved into, you know, from a literal standpoint to kind of more figuratively, which is just, you know, going through and auditing your life, whether it be your house, your digital life, any part of your life, and removing the things that just get in the way of what, you know, where you want to go or what you want to do. And so through that, those couple of years, it sort of formed this just passion I have for, you know, minimalism, minimalist design, white space. In fact, I'm a believer that white space is where the magic happens. And so I insist on designing with lots of space, lots of white, lots of monochromatic looks. And so the color inside of my websites has just over the years, and we made the joke earlier about staring at each other's black and white photos. It's just sort of a representation of just, you know, it's who I am and what I love. And so I feel uncomfortable trying to design outside of that comfort zone. And so I've chosen to just do everything in the way that I like to do it.
You've touched on that topic a little bit a few sentences ago when you mentioned that there are so many upcoming designers and that a designer always fears a little bit inferior when it comes to peers. So do you think that doing things your own way, black and white, means like a simplistic way of dealing with many design problems? I don't know. It's hard to communicate that. How do you think your design manner puts you compared to fellow designers?
It's hard to compare yourself against fellow designers just because everyone, you know, that is, everyone has their own sort of style and taste, and and they do things for different reasons. You know, we talked about Rafal earlier and just how he does things a certain way. And it's just, for me, it's just what I do is extremely intentional from a design standpoint. I purposely omit stuff so that focus can be on the stuff that's there. And so typography is huge for me because I'm sort of an advocate that really well done typography is design in and of itself. And you don't have to fill a page with all kinds of elements if the typography is there. Because for me, the experience as a user is I want to read, I want a well designed atmosphere. And so, you know, like I try as much as I feel imposter syndrome at times when I look for inspiration and see other well-designed stuff. You know, at the end of the day, it's really about like, you know, what are my core beliefs as a designer and what are the goals I want to accomplish? And really just sort of sticking with, you know, what feels comfortable. And when you do what feels comfortable, it comes naturally. And when it comes naturally, it's easier to do. And, you know, philosophically, when you're staying in your own lane, it just makes you a happier person.
Absolutely. It sounds like you've been fortunate to not do client work for a while by now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. When I was at Studio Press and Copyblogger, I maybe once or twice over the however many years took on side projects. And most of the side projects I would do at that point were just things for friends and basically free projects. Over the last 2 years, I've just, in the spirit of trying to just generate some revenue to just bring in some money, you know, I've taken on a handful of projects, which can be seen on the homepage of my website right now. I did a website called Yoga with Adrian. She's a very, very popular YouTube yoga instructor. I think she's got like 6 million followers. I've redesigned Becoming Minimalist, Be More with Less. Again, sort of all in that same, just the simplistic space, both from, you know, who you're designing it for, kind of people who are just basically like-minded. And it makes it easier to just design minimally for them because that's what they're looking for.
I love it because one of the ways to become successful as a designer is to specialize in something. And some people specialize in a certain type of product, let's say in web applications or in mobile apps. Some people specialize in an industry. And you clearly specialized in being a minimalist, and people who want a quality minimalist product could find you and your products as well.
Yeah, it's funny. Everybody jokes with me that, you know, they come across a website that's black and white with just a hint of color. And that's a Brian Gardner design because it just, you know, and in fact, we built a house a few years ago and it was basically that black and white and a hint of color. And, you know, I drive a white Jeep Grand Cherokee and most of my clothing, thank God Jeff Sheldon from Ugg Monk exists because it's all basically black, white, and gray. Yeah, like those are, that's my color palette right there.
For those who are listening to us, but who are still doing client work and not every client is a minimalist. So if you're a minimalist at heart, but you have to adjust to different styles that are imposed by your clients, how do you manage that? How do you balance your desire for keeping things clean and the requirements of your client, the traditions of conversion rate optimization, which is another topic, and making things pop and click and whatever. So any recommendations for our listeners there?
You know, that's tough because for me, the projects that I'm doing now have been people who have been following me for years and realize that, you know, I'm taking on some work. And so they're just naturally attracted to the designs that I've done over the years. And so they're almost sort of like pre-qualified to accept the designs that I will do for them. Brian, I love how you design. I love your minimalism. I want to hire you kind of thing. So it's easy to then just say, that's what we're going to do because that's what they're looking for because that's how they know you. Now, for people who are maybe they don't have that same luxury where they just need to take any project because they've got to pay their bills and stuff like that. That becomes a little tougher where, you know, maybe someone that comes to them wants something different and the designer just, I think there has to be some sort of a mutual understanding and, you know, and maybe, and there, and this has happened to me once or twice where somebody wants something that I just can't or don't want to design. And I'm like, look, I might not be the right designer for you. So let me find someone who I can recommend that might be a little better fit for you, just because nobody likes to do what they don't want to be doing. Of course, again, if you got to pay the bills, you got to pay the bills too. So there's that. But I think really just clearly communicating with a client and explaining to them, because a lot of times, you know, you'll do something a certain way and the client may think they don't want that. But if you explain to them, hey, here's the reason why we're doing this, then it makes sense. And a great example of that was when I redesigned Becoming Minimalist. Joshua sells his books on his website and he had a sidebar at the time. And he, at the very top of his sidebar, was selling his book. And so when we redesigned his site, I said, look, we're going to kill the sidebars. We're going to remove sidebars from your site, which of course he kind of panicked at first. And I'm like, okay, you know, that feels uncomfortable, but here's why I suggest we do that. If I'm reading your wonderful content and I get to the very bottom of your blog post or your article, that seems to me the best place to try to sell your book, right? Because someone has read the whole thing, they really enjoyed it and they want more. If you leave it in the sidebar and they're all the way down at the page, the book is long gone from the screen because it's at the top of the sidebar and there's no call to action at that point. And so sometimes when you can explain to a client, hey, here's why we're doing this and why it makes sense, you know, they may not see it at first, but when you explain it to them, they're like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And in fact, after we did the redesign, removed the sidebar and put the books at the bottom of his post, he sold more books because, you know, what better place to sell a book than at the end of a great blog post? So things like that.
Do you feel that responsive design, which is now not a trend, but a necessity, influenced this simplicity towards website structure? I absolutely admire the fact that today it's okay to do, you know, simple modular design one by one, like you just described, as opposed to 10 years ago, the clients would have all kinds of crazy requirements around the place.
Yeah, I love that mobile devices and responsiveness is a thing now. In fact, a few years ago, I sort of switched my design process to be, you know, mobile first is what they call it, right? Which is, you know, even within a style sheet, just designing for the mobile and then, you know, breaking it down into desktop view. And so that was a pretty big transition for me because, you know, it had been the other way around for so long. But it just makes it easier if you think of things more or less just being stacked. And thankfully with CSS, we've got some technology to do some really, you know, CSS grids and things like that. But I love that it kind of helps my battle for a simpler web just by, you know, hey, people are viewing things differently. There's no such thing as above the fold. Sidebars, you know, 50% of the time are knocked it to the bottom of all the content anyway. So things like that just really sort of help the cause and say, hey, you know, you want to rank better in Google, you need to have less on the website because of page speed and loads and, you know, things like that too. So there are some things that sort of help equip me as I try to, you know, do things and work with people to simplify things and to kind of pare down stuff that's on a website.
You're about to launch a SaaS product as a founder. Mm-hmm. And when it's live, what kind of landing page is it going to have? Because there are certain components on the SaaS website that are traditional. And also, marketing consultants do what they call heuristic analysis, which runs across a checklist of like 25 different things you should be doing on the same landing page. And I wonder if you're going to be following those traditions or if you're going to do things your own way.
It's funny, my partner Tony is more of a tester and a sort of a book smart, like we got to do it a certain way, process oriented guy. And I'm such a romantic when it comes to just design, just what feels right and things like that. So I'm sure we will meet somewhere in the middle, but you know, our landing page, which is already kind of designed, will be very visual. You know, we're ultimately selling a design tool for real estate agents to help them establish an online presence. And so for us, you know, we can, I think the fewer words on the page, the better. Again, the real estate industry, not as technical as others might be. You know, if you're selling web hosting, that might need to be a more technically driven, more, you know, statistically proven sort of a sales page or landing page. But for us, we just want the real estate agents to see the beautiful website they can have. And so we're going to have a lot of white space, a lot of great typography, you know, and a picture will say 1,000 words sort of a thing. And so for us, it'll be a lot more visual than it will be textual, and we'll see what happens. And of course, we'll evolve and iterate along the way. If maybe we don't have enough information on there, we'll have to change and update things as we get feedback. But it'll be a very simple minimalist design landing page.
Are there any functioning SaaS products that you absolutely admire that you think fall into the minimalist camp? And for me, one of the idols was definitely Squarespace and their amazing websites. I'm not sure that today's version of it really satisfies my taste fully. Maybe it's some modern trends that I don't understand. But what about yourself?
Yeah, Squarespace back in the day was like the epitome of beautiful design. They have since, you know, over the years, it has gotten clunkier, is maybe not the right word, but some of that shine has been lost. So I definitely hear you there. As a designer, I loved what it was back in the day. As a WordPress user, I was always an advocate of WordPress, and Squarespace, although easy for a user, had a number of drawbacks. In terms of tools, I use Figma right now to design. I love the interface there. I'm a huge fan of Grammarly, which is a writing tool to help write better and grammar and stuff like that. It's very well designed, and I feel really comfortable inside of that. So when I do write, I always write in Grammarly, just because the experience for me is super good. I'm just trying to think of what others there might be. I don't use a ton of tools to do what I do. Photoshop guy, but again, Figma has sort of taken over that. It just, you know, ConvertKit is what I use for email marketing. Very easy to use interface. Yeah, it's kind of the extent of it.
Are we talking about the products themselves or their marketing websites? Because I'd love to see some examples for the websites as well.
Those are more the products themselves. In terms of websites, mm-hmm. Gosh, I've probably got a bookmark of just well-designed sort of sites. Squarespace was always a good one. Everything else, a lot of things seem so cluttered because everyone's trying to do everything for everybody. So nowadays, you know, there's so much that needs to be on a website because, again, everyone's a platform and offers everything. So.
And your product is also going to be a platform, right?
It will, but we're going to insist that it stays simple. So hopefully that will stay true all the way to the end.
Tell us more about your work process and how you make those design decisions and what kind of tools you use and what kind of equipment, I don't know, notebooks, anything else. When I was young and naive, I thought that, you know, I was using an affordable Windows machine and I was thinking like, oh, that stuff is for fancy geeks. But now that I get older, I have time and sophistication to pick my favorite tools. So what about yourself there?
I am an Apple fan, and it's a great day for that, right? Because Apple is having an event today. So I design primarily on an iMac, a 27-inch iMac, just more screen real estate. Feels more comfortable to have just space. I used to use Photoshop for a lot of things. What I would do for designs is I would just surf the web, you know, browse different galleries, just look for components that I would like. And I would literally start screenshotting and tapestry, like just making of sort of like I like this header. So I'm going to cut out the header and put that at the top of my canvas. And then, oh, here's a cool hero area or something like that from a different website. And I would then have what's sort of like a quilt work of a design. And then from there, I would just basically design my own version of what I just put together. And for me, that's always been a process. Most of the stuff that I did at StudioPress from a theme standpoint, but also even from client sites, customer sites, it would all be inspired by different pieces of different parts of the web. A lot of times I bookmark things and categorize them, cool footer, you know, or cool header or awesome opt-in form. And I just kind of keep notes of things. And then, you know, if something comes up where I need to design an opt-in form, I'll go back to the inspiration and kind of use that as a thing. But Figma for me now, from a workflow standpoint, is so much easier than Photoshop. It's such a great tool. I know Rafal, we talked about him. He's got some tools and products around Figma, and it's easy to use. It's easy to move things around and to, you know, fonts and colors and replace things and all the auto layout stuff. As a designer, it really helps make my workflow a lot easier.
Yeah, finally in 2020, we can resize the buttons automatically, right?
Mm-hmm.
This year has arrived.
Yes.
Tell us a bit more about your years at StudioPress and how you design things for other people, such as themes, while keeping them, I assume, minimalist, mm-hmm. and how you were able to satisfy their interest and at the same time still maintain your taste.
So StudioPress was always an interesting experience because there's a difference between a one-off design specific to a client and designing something that can be consumed by hundreds or thousands of people. It got frustrating at times because WordPress evolved and allowed for so many different things like widgets and all of that stuff. And so it was a different process because people do things and use things differently. You can set up a demo site, which we would do, but then there would be the person who put a calendar widget in their header. You know, and I'm like, mm-hmm. you can't stop people from doing things like that. You can try to encourage them to not do that, but on some level, we had to sort of over accommodate all of the scenarios in which people would put widgets in different places and things that were not necessarily intended within the design. But again, WordPress allows people to do different things. And so to design for StudioPress started to become frustrating because I would want to remove a bunch of options for people because I don't want them to do certain things. And so there was always a struggle behind me wanting to oversimplify stuff and people wanting the ability to do their thing. And it got a little bit tougher towards the end because I was starting to get old and grumpy about it. And I would be like, no, I want it this way. And I would have to be reminded that thousands of people would want it differently. And so there was a little bit there. Throughout just the years, it was fun to sort of identify, as I mentioned earlier, with the real estate stuff, you know, certain niches and things that would come up, like podcasting started to become a thing, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And so it'd be fun. Oh, hey, let's do a design for a podcast theme and stuff like that. And always kind of fun to come up with ideas and see what would work or what wouldn't work. And, you know, a lot of times we would design something that was so well designed, but just the masses just didn't understand or appreciate it. And so we would, what I would call, say, dumb down the design, just make it sort of boring and bland, but people would like that. And so Rafal and I would always laugh about that because, you know, he and I just loved just really, really good, simple, clean design. But a lot of times that wouldn't sell the best. And so it was always sort of a struggle between designing what we wanted to design and designing what we think would sell, which sometimes were two totally different things. So, but it was fun. It was fun to work with so many different types of people.
If I had like a second life track, I would absolutely love to design some website themes and make it a business. And I'm so envious that you've had that experience in your life. Now you can move on to SaaS and everything,
uh-huh.
but you had that in your life. When you're looking for inspiration, do you have any specific resources that you particularly like to explore? Or is it more about just, you know, being always alert to awesome stuff and keeping your bookmarks in place?
I have a couple of sources that I bookmark. One of them is TypeWolf, which is a more of a typography-based website. Every day they, you know, publish a new site with great typography and link to the fonts that are used and stuff like that. And so that always is a rabbit hole for me where I'll see something and I'll, oh, that's a great font. And I'll click the font link and then see 20 different sites using that font. And so I'll get into ruts where Inter is a font. Rasmus Anderson, he's the guy who created the Inter font. I'm in sort of a phase right now where all I want to use is Inter font. So I'll go through phases like that. There's a couple of other websites. OnePageLove.com is one that I just like to go to because just a showcase of single page website type things. There's a new one, like what's it called? dark mode design, which is all about basically dark mode design. So it's like a CSS gallery of black websites, dark websites with light text. And so once in a while, some people on Slack and I will just go back and forth. If we come across something that a well-designed site, like I'll shoot Rafal a note and say, hey, check this out. And so there's a lot of that that goes back and forth. And so we definitely are inspired by the web for sure.
I'm so glad that you mentioned typography, because that was my last question for you, since white space, black and white, that clearly does not need any resources, but fancy typography definitely needs a quality typeface. So where do you go for your fonts? Do you think it's okay to design with like Google fonts and other free options that are available out there?
I have a love-hate relationship with Google Fonts, because with StudioPress, when we designed themes, we had to use Google Fonts because we couldn't, you know, you can't package premium or paid fonts like Adobe or, you know, any of the other foundries that are out there. They just, you know, they're single license things. And so Google was always our source of, you know, fonts outside of the traditional browser fonts or the system fonts. And so thankfully, it seems like within the last year or so, Google has started to include a number of better fonts, more unique fonts in their library, which is good. Inter is an example of a font that I was like, wow, that's on Google Fonts. That's awesome. So I could create themes that anybody could buy and sell using a nicer typography approach. And so Typewolf, again, is the place where I go to look for typography inspiration. I have from time to time, you know, bought fonts that are outside of Google Fonts. I use Adobe a lot for client stuff just because it's sort of a step up, but because I have a Creative Cloud account, I can use them for client sites. And so I'll go through those. And every once in a while, I'll come across a font that just I have to have or I have to buy, if anything, just to have on my local computer to use for a project someday. And so there's that too. But I'm a huge typography fan. I'm a believer that typography, white space, and, you know, good use of photography can accomplish pretty much any design element you want.
I'm also a fan of Typekit, whatever it's called today. We use that for a lot of our projects as well. We're lucky to have things like that plus Retina displays, right?
Yep. Oh, for sure.
I can't imagine. Well, I can imagine it was years ago when Retina was not a thing yet, and we had to deal with pixelated fonts for websites and everything. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. As we're wrapping up today's episode, would there be any advice for our listeners who want to be more autonomous in their design decisions, who want to stand up for their minimalism? What can they do in their client work and daily life to better promote their good taste?
I would say using social media. I use social media a lot. A lot of times I'll just spend a little bit of time each day. The other day I was designing just to design. I had no purpose of what I was doing other than just had an idea, a vision. I just wanted to sort of exercise that muscle in my head. And I opened Figma and I just came up with a design that maybe I'll use someday for something. You know, so sometimes, and it's hard to find time like that, right? Because if you have paying clients and you got to do the bills and stuff like that, like all you're doing is just working for other people. But just carve out some time, some creative time to just do stuff that's not necessarily for anybody else, but just to do it because you love to do it. And sometimes you'll find, like, I'll end up in places in Figma, I'm like, wow, I would have never thought I would have ever done something like this or whatnot. And so I think it's important to, you know, every once in a while, just do something for the love of it. And so I think, you know, for people who are designing or trying to sort of stand out, you may find yourself in places that you just didn't expect, you know, like if you're not doing something for a client and you're out there just designing, maybe you start to realize, hey, I'm starting to like a certain trend or like I design a certain way and I really like this. And then you can sort of start to embrace that and spend more time sort of inside of that craft. Again, I think you introduced me as minimalist designer, right, at the beginning of the show. And, you know, the use of social media to say, hey, here's something I'm, you know, working on, or here's a cool design element. And, you know, to get a response from people is a good way to start to kind of cultivate a sense of, you know, being known for a certain style or or whatnot.
When you go deeper into your SaaS product journey, I imagine there will be more things to do that don't allow much free time for design work. I wonder what are the side projects going to be for you that you'll be distracting yourself with from your core business?
That's a fantastic question and something that I even yesterday was thinking about. Because right now we're in build mode, right? We're sort of pre-launching the brand. The product's not ready yet. And so on a call with partners, they're like, hey, you know, in 2 months or, you know, when we ship the product, life will be different. It will become busy and there will be consumers and people who need support and all of these things that will sort of take up a lot more of my time. And so, yes, to your point, I think on some level, I'll have to figure out. And thankfully, the product itself will be a lot about design, right? So we'll have new styles or designs or templates for agents to choose from. So there'll always be a part of my day where we'll be responsible for creating new design stuff. So I'm hoping that will be enough. And if not, then, you know, I don't know if it's sort of, you know, free WordPress themes where I just design for the sake of designing and just make them available just to have a way to sort of continue to exercise those muscles. Maybe there's something like that, or redesigning my own website a couple times. There's always something to design in my world.
The big fallacy of SaaS for me was that what it takes you, you know, a couple hours or days to design, it takes ages for the developers to build. And especially in a small company kind of situation when you don't have 20 developers lined up for you. So what you can do is go design some Facebook ads. And I can tell you it's not nearly as exciting. So where can people go online to find yourself, your writing, your designs, and your product?
So by nature of the simplistic approach, I have pared down all of my side projects and everything will be based out of my personal website, which is briangardner.com. That is where I have portfolio, where I'm currently selling a few WordPress themes, where I also do my writing, where I can be hired. And of course, down in the footer, links to my social media accounts, most of which are at bgardner, B-G-A-R-D-N-E-R. And then the only other place on the web I plan to spend most of my time will be at Agent Engine, which of course will be, you know, the quote, the business moving forward. And so Agent Engine will have its own, you know, slew of social media accounts and stuff like that, but that will be specific to the SaaS product.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom today, Brian, and I wish you good luck in all your endeavors.
Thank you so much, Jane. Appreciate it.
Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
Yep, you too.